This is the first time in AFN's 50-year history that we've ever endorsed a presidential candidate.
The AFN Board of Directors weighs in on the race for the White House. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, frustration in Nikiski over the uncertain future of a gas liquefaction plant.
They just cut a swath through here, cut 600 acres out, tore the houses down, and then left us.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Salmon Life is an ongoing storytelling project celebrating the unique connections Alaskans have with their salmon. Explore the beautiful stories, meet the people, and help build a statewide community united by salmon love by visiting salmonlife.org. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
For the first time, the Alaska Federation of Natives has endorsed a candidate for president, Hillary Clinton. In a news release, the organization said Clinton will help further self-determination and sovereignty for Native people, while Donald Trump would marginalize and dramatically weaken the trust relationship between Native Americans and the federal government. AFN President Julie Kitka told the audience at the Tribal Leaders Conference this morning, the AFN board decided to weigh in on the upcoming presidential election.
This is the first time in AFN's 50-year history that we've ever endorsed a presidential candidate.
Kitka says the gesture isn't intended to tell anyone how to vote, but is meant to show leadership at a critical time for politics that directly impact Alaska Native people. The three-page resolution lists Clinton's promises and record on issues relevant to Indigenous communities.
Our number one thing is we don't want to be marginalized. We don't want to be put to be a target where all we're doing is raising money for litigation and fighting for our rights. We want to establish our rights and build on them and have a future for our children and grandchildren.
The resolution does not mention the name of Clinton's opponent, Republican Donald Trump. The Moose Creek fire near Sutton is nearly half contained at 46%, according to fire information officials today. Fire managers expect to have the blaze fully contained by the weekend. The wildfire started last Saturday morning, sparked by a burning debris pile. High winds in the Matanuska Valley drove the fire to consume more than 300 acres. Winds diminished on Tuesday, allowing crews to get a start on a line around the fire. The western flank of the fire has significant heat remaining that firefighters are trying to extinguish. About 80 personnel are still working on the blaze. Over the last 2 years, the Alaska LNG project bought about 630 acres of land in Nikiski on the Kenai Peninsula. That's where the state and its partners hoped to build a giant natural gas liquefaction plant, and several homes were razed. But now, the project's future is uncertain, and so is the fate of that land. Those left behind in Nikiski aren't sure what the community will look like going forward. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more.
Bill Warren's house is tucked into the trees near a bend in the Kenai Spur Highway. It's easy to miss. I made a wrong turn when I went to visit him and ended up just one driveway south on land owned by the Alaska LNG Project, LLC. The lot is vacant and papered with no trespassing signs. There used to be a house there.
They tore it down. I built it, and my mother lived in it.
Warren is one of the holdouts in this neighborhood. They're among the many residents of this small, unincorporated community whose properties butt up against land owned by the Alaska LNG Project. But for whatever reason, they refused to sell. Since 2014, the state's three oil company partners in the Alaska LNG Project, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips, bought nearly 150 parcels of land in Nikiski. The area could eventually house a massive plant where North Slope natural gas could be processed and then exported. But for now, all of that's on hold. On some of the land, the companies tore down the houses, but it's not clear when or if the promised project will replace them, and Warren is not happy.
Well, they ruined us. I always call us a village. We were a bona fide village out here with the people and businesses. And they just cut a swath through here, cut 600 acres out, tore the houses down, and then left us. And I don't like it.
Warren has been in Nikiski since 1969, and he's no stranger to industrial development. Just to the north of his home, the ConocoPhillips and Agrium docks jut out into the inlet. There's a tank farm nearby. Helicopters regularly hug the shoreline and fly along the bluff in front of his property. He shows me a cabin he built using money from Exxon, paid to him in exchange for putting a road through a thicket of his trees.
We've been working on it all summer, but it's a nice little, cute little place. It's not really, it's just kind of a, there's the outdoor toilet there.
What a view.
There are no trees blocking his panorama of the Cook Inlet, just a mind-boggling expanse of sky and water. The Redoubt volcano looms on the horizon, and, of course, there are the offshore platforms.
There's many of them. It's a little foggy, but there's one right over there off the point.
Warren's a welder. He helped build a lot of the infrastructure in Nikiski, and all of that infrastructure is one of the reasons the Alaska LNG partners chose Nikiski as the end of the line for North Slope natural gas. But with low oil and gas prices challenging the economics of the mega project, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips announced that they wouldn't invest in the next stage of the project. Now, on the Kenai Peninsula, the workers taking soil samples and testing the water are gone, and the project has shut down its land purchase office. The state's taken over, but details on that transition are hard to come by. Warren says he got a letter in September from the company handling the land purchases for the project. It said they were suspending negotiations, and that leaves people like him in limbo.
And it's left us where we don't really own our property. I mean, we do legally, but our plans, our hopes, our dreams, we can't act on because it's all on hold.
Those 630 acres in Nikiski are a linchpin of the state's plans to take over the project. If the state wants to move forward with permitting the project, the federal government requires that it have access to that land. Larry Persily is an oil and gas advisor to the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
You have to show you have a site, not just a site picked on a map, but you have to show that you have control of the land. Because without land, just like without a pipeline or without gas, without financing, you don't have a project.
Persily says the federal government doesn't care how the state works out the deal with the companies that currently own the land, either by buying it or signing a long-term lease, just that it does. But the state hasn't released any details about how it's going to do that, and it's not clear if the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, which is heading up the state's effort, has the money to buy nearly $30 million worth of land. The corporation wouldn't make anyone available to talk about its plans. In a written statement, spokesperson Rosetta Alcantara said it is currently negotiating with the producers. And the lack of information has left residents frustrated. House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Republican whose district includes Nikiski, says the flurry of land buying in the area raised expectations in the community, expectations that now may not be met.
It's going to go forward. I've tried to explain to folks. Then go buy 600 acres of land. It's 20 million, you know, I don't know what the dollar amount, but it's $20 million or whatever. That's nothing compared to a $65 billion project.
For Warren, that hope has given away to frustration. And when he thinks about the future, he tends to get worked up. He's become a well-known fixture on the local morning talk radio circuit, calling in to complain about what the project has done to the community.
I'm fearless. What in the hell can they do to me? I'm 75 years old, and they can't withdraw me from work or anything, and I pay my taxes, so what, they got to listen somewhat.
Meanwhile, if the Alaska LNG project does go forward, it will need another 200 acres to piece together the site for its Nikiski plant. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, using marijuana license money to support student activities in Sitka.
It is a very interesting and novel approach, but I appreciate the creativity in really keeping our students first and foremost.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Recent polls show the presidential race unexpectedly close in Alaska, and in the coming weeks, we'll be checking in with voters around the state, asking what matters most to them and who they're supporting as Election Day approaches. Tonight, we hear from Julie Tisdale of Anchorage. Tisdale is 47, an accountant, and a lifelong Alaskan, and she's an enthusiastic supporter of Donald Trump. She sat down with Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes to talk about faith, politics, and The Apprentice.
When I pull up to Julie Tisdale's house in a newly developed pocket of West Anchorage, the first thing I see is a bumper sticker that says, Proud Conservative.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Zach.
Zach, Julie.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Tisdale's dogs, a Rottweiler and a Pitbull, give the occasional bark from upstairs. Nearby is a bookshelf showing off the names and titles from the country's most prominent conservative writers as we pull up chairs in Tisdale's very tidy dining room.
Donald Trump. I always, you know, I have to start at the beginning because I always watched The Apprentice. I loved that show. And then they had Celebrity Apprentice, and I think I watched every single season. And what I really loved about that show is how they always gave money to nonprofits. And he's straight into the point. I love it that he would just be, you're fired, get out of here. You know, it's just, you're fired, move on. I don't know, I guess I really appreciated that. So what, a year and a half ago when he decided to run for president, I think that's what this country needs, is somebody who can run a business. You know, it's going to be good for our country.
Tisdale says she first got involved in politics in a serious way about 4 years ago. And now she's the treasurer of the Anchorage Republican Women's Club.
You know, conservative Christian ladies. We're not like the far, far right that some people, you know, like to say about, you know, conservatives. And we just want to get involved in our community.
You mentioned being a Christian, and I'm curious what your faith means to you.
I'm Catholic. I've been Catholic, oh gosh, probably 15 years. It's very important to me. So,
what's the relationship for you between your faith and your politics?
You know, I guess that a lot of faiths, and this might be upset some people, a lot of faiths are like, well, you can't have gay marriage and you can't have that. Well, I'm not that extreme. I think if two people love each other and they want to get married, I would never be one to tell somebody that they can't do that. You know, of course, I'm definitely pro-life. I'm not able to have kids, and so I think having a child is a blessing, you know, and I just, the thought of, you know, somebody having an abortion breaks my heart, so I'm definitely pro-life when it comes to that.
You know, when you talk about conservative issues or the kind of values in the Republican Party that you like, what are some of those values? What do you see as kind of the issues that matter the most to you?
Definitely oil development, and we are an oil state. And yes, I wish we had different industries where we could make money, but you know, Alaska's a very oil dependent state. So to me, it's, you know, more development within Alaska, you know, responsible development, of course. To me, that's a very big thing. My ex-husband, when I was married, he works for the oil companies, he still does. He was laid off, not this May, but the May prior, while we were still married. That was a very scary, scary thing for us.
And tell me about your feelings towards Donald Trump. I'm curious how his campaign for you is compared to the character and the persona and the personality from The Apprentice for you. Do you see them as the same, or do you think it's kind of different characters that have come forward?
I think it is a little bit different. I wish he would stop complaining. That's what really bothers me, and I don't like it. It's like, I don't know, put on your big boy panties, you know what I mean, and just stop complaining. Yeah, the media is against you. You know, all of a sudden, all these women are coming out, you know, making these accusations. It, you know, I don't buy it. You know, to me, a lot of it seems made up.
And how did you react to the tape that came out of the mic being on and the remarks about groping and some of those remarks?
Well, I listened to it, and I was like, oh, you know, that's a guy being a guy. And I was married to a slope worker, and he said things, he cussed a lot, and, you know, would say sexist remarks, and to me, that it is locker room talk.
The polling makes it seem like it'll be a hard road for Mr. Trump to win, and I'm curious how that makes you feel, and then what you think you'll do if he doesn't win the presidency.
If he does lose, you know what? Tomorrow's a new day. You know, it's, you know, then in four more years, hopefully, you know, the Republican Party will have another good, solid candidate to run. You know, it's, the world's not going to end. It's going to be a bummer.
That was Donald Trump supporter Julie Tisdale of Anchorage speaking with Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes. Tomorrow, we'll hear from a Hillary Clinton supporter on St. Paul Island. Student activities in Sitka are getting a boost from the marijuana industry. During their meeting last week, the assembly approved depositing all money generated from state marijuana licensing fees into a specific fund for student travel sponsored by the school district. Assemblyman Stephen Eisenbeis believes this could generate $8,000 to $10,000 depending on how the burgeoning pot industry takes off. So far, the state has awarded licenses to three cultivation facilities and one retail shop in Sitka. Each state fee costs $5,000, and local communities receive half of that. As for student activities in Sitka, the local contribution has been fairly stable, $132,000 this year, and teams and clubs fundraise to make up the rest. With more students flying to competitions around Southeast, the need is greater. Superintendent Mary Wagner says she appreciates the assembly's creativity.
Activities and athletics are a great antidote to smoking marijuana. When you're involved with activities, you don't want to. So it is a very interesting and novel approach, but I appreciate the creativity in really keeping our students first and foremost in their minds and action.
The idea wasn't embraced by everyone, though. Aaron Bean, owner of the grow and retail operation Green Leaf Incorporated, objected to the ordinance, stressing the importance of keeping marijuana out of young hands.
If we're funding school programs and the kids that are traveling know where these funds come from, I would hate to encourage, or it's not direct advertising, but I feel as if it's priming, if that makes sense. And I wouldn't be in favor of that as a business owner.
Mim McConnell, who completed her final meeting as Sitka's mayor on Tuesday night, said while she understood where Bean was coming from, there is precedent.
To me, it's kind of like the tobacco tax going to the hospital. So it's we don't give it to the hospital and people thinking, oh, good money going to the hospital, let's smoke more. So hopefully that's not what people think.
The ordinance passed unanimously.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
The Kodiak Police Department recently reinstated its body-worn camera program with a new model. Last December, KPD Chief Rhonda Wallace notified her employees that the program would be suspended not long after the city was forced to surrender a body cam video under court order. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
The video in question recorded the events of September 16, 2015, when three Kodiak police officers had an encounter with a young autistic man, Nick Pletnikoff. In the days and weeks after, the officers were accused of using excessive force. While investigating, KMXT's Freedom of Information Act request was denied by the city of Kodiak, prompting a lawsuit in which the station prevailed, resulting in the video's release. The Kodiak Police Department stopped using the body cams days later. KMXT reached out to Myron Angstman, one of the attorneys representing Pletnikoff, in a lawsuit against the city, and he said the body cam footage has been vital to his case.
Even with a videotape, there's an active dispute as to what happened. But without the videotape, we would have no chance of showing that our client was mistreated.
He said video recordings are a valuable tool in interactions between law enforcement and the public.
The accurate reproduction of what happens when a person is taken into custody is an important part of deciding whether or not things are done correctly. And so they routinely use recordings of interviews and other police conduct at the police station. Why not use them on the street whenever possible?
One issue Police Chief Rhonda Wallace identified with the older camera model is that it revealed the identities of those on tape, which she said can be confidential information.
What we found was that, you know, as officers are conducting their investigations, that it captures not just what the statement is being made by the person who's the point of contact, but other individuals that are around that necessarily wouldn't want to be on a video but are now captured because they've walked by or they were standing in a window watching what was happening and you know, they didn't want to be there.
Angstman said police departments can make the decision whether or not to reveal the subject's identities as long as the original remains intact. And in some cases, the court may get involved.
The court can make a definitive ruling as to whether the whole tape or part of the tape should not be released to anyone. And that can happen. It already does happen with regard to lots of things that take part in legal cases. So why not include body cams in that discussion?
The camera model KPD settled on is the Axon Body from Taser International, the same company that produces the Taser stun gun. KPD made the announcement Monday. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
A new book called Master of Alaska portrays a side of Alexander Baranov that other historical writings may not have considered. Roger Seller wrote the novel based on research of Baranov's letters and other material. Seller grew up in King Salmon and was long fascinated by Baranov's story. Seller says Baranov was a critical figure in Alaska's early history.
He was eventually able to bring about peace with the Tlingits in southeastern Alaska, and that's after having undergone a real war with the Tlingits. But he was able to make peace with them, and with his main antagonist throughout his career, which was Chief Kotlian. The picture in the back of the book that shows Chief Kotlian and his wife, in that picture, Chief Kotlian is wearing the Allies of Russia silver medal around his neck that Baranov awarded to him after they were able to make peace.
Why did you decide to write it as historical fiction rather than just chronicling his life and adventures in Alaska?
Well, the thing is that there's a lot of drama in the story of Baranov. However, history doesn't happen in a natural three-act structure, which is sort of what you need to make it work really as a dramatic story. And so you have to do some reordering of events to make it really work as a story, and also in order to bring out the characters, you need to have dialogue. And once you start putting dialogue in their mouths, even though it's based on what we know about those characters and based pretty closely on that, then it becomes fiction.
In your book, you write that if it were not for Baranov, Alaska would likely be part of Canada. Why is that?
Well, see, the thing is that the British wanted to take Alaska. They wanted to take it away from the Russians and add it to Canada. And there were the Russians until Baranov got there. There was just chaos, and he was able to get things organized so he could hold Alaska together as a colony, and thus have it to sell to the United States when the U.S. became interested in it in 1867.
Tell us about the Native women that are in your story. Three of them play prominent roles. Tell us about how you developed these characters and who they're based on.
Well, you know, in the most of the source material that I relied on was consisted of letters that Baranov wrote back to Russia and letters that other people wrote that talked about him and so on. He always made a copy of every report and letter that he sent back to Russia because a third of the ships sank on the way. So he always wanted to have a copy ready so he could prove that he actually did send an earlier report. And we got those letters when we bought Alaska from Russia. But anyway, it's in those letters. In those letters, he describes Anna a couple of times, not in any great extent, but enough to that gave me an idea of the role that she played in his life and the influence that she could very well have had on him, especially regarding his gift of empathy, and because she was a very empathetic person. And now Kasasi, the wife of Chief Kotlyon, the only thing we know about her is what we see in that picture in the back of the book in the appendix, and she is quite a striking figure in that picture. She's obviously very satisfied with her situation, and whereas he isn't quite as satisfied, he has a very stern expression on his face, even though he's made peace with Baranov, but she's quite satisfied with the way things have worked out. And as far as Irina, Baranov's daughter, she was written about in letters that her husband, who became succeeded Baranov as governor, wrote, in which he described his wife, because Irina ended up marrying. She married a Russian naval officer. And he was appointed governor after Baranov.
Roger Seller is the author of the historical novel Master of Alaska. Links are at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jennifer Canfield and Zachariah Hughes in Fairbanks, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney in Nikiski, Emily Kwong in Sitka, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. It's a fact. 85% of Alaska Native and American Indian people don't use illegal drugs. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/weare. This message sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization. Salmon Life is an ongoing storytelling project celebrating the unique connections Alaskans have with their salmon. Explore the beautiful stories, meet the people, and help build a statewide community united by salmon love by visiting salmonlife.org. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettisworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.